is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne County. I am back talking with our dual hat, Master Food Preserver, Charge of Master Gardener, Sue Mosbacher. Hello, Sue. How are you?
Hi, Debbie. I'm doing fine. Thank you. And you?
Oh, good. And we have a lot of Master Gardeners when I'm talking to them, and a lot of people just in period that live in our rural counties that love to go camping. I mean, I love to go camping too, I've got to admit. But you were talking about there's ways to preserve foods to essentially make it easy to go camping. And you had a whole, you have a whole list of items to suggest.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember one of them was if you're backpacking, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you're backpacking, you can actually have your soup mixture and it can be mixing together on your back as you're walking.
Yeah.
And by the, what is that one?
Oh, my husband used to hike along the Pacific Crest Trail, and you can dehydrate anything. So what I would do is I would take ground beef and I would dehydrate the cooked ground beef. And then I had, so I put that in a little plastic container, heavy duty plastic, and I had ground beef in there. And then I would take dried spices that I had dried and I put that in there. And I had some mushrooms, I dried mushrooms, and I put that in there. And then I had tomato skin powder. And people don't think about tomato skins, but if you are cooking your tomatoes after you've harvested, and most of the time you peel off the skins and people, you know, throw them to the chickens or they, you know, get composted, but you can dry them and then grind them up. And so I would add dried tomato powder. And then about an hour before he'd get to camp, he'd stop and he'd take the lid off the container, he'd pour some water in there, put the lid back on and keep hiking. And so during that hour, they would rehydrate and everything in it with the walking would shake around and mix. And then he'd get to camp and everything had rehydrated and he'd pour it into this little backpack stove and heat it up and he'd have hot soup. And it was with meat and vegetables and spices. And you know, he could throw some salt and pepper in there if he wanted, but it was very lightweight and he wasn't carrying a lot of bulky stuff around.
It's dehydrated.
It's amazing. When you dry something, when you dry vegetables, you dry till they're about 10% moisture left. And are you familiar, you know, little tiny 4-ounce canning jars where you get little teens of jams and jellies? So
right.
We had in one of our classes recently, we took a pound bag of carrots and we topped them up into little coins and we dried them. And the result fit in the little 4-ounce jar with room to spare, because so much of our food is water. And so you remove most of the water and it takes up no space. And you dry vegetables until they're crisp or little rock hard pieces of carrot. And so they take up no space. They don't smash when you're carrying them. They don't spoil because pathogens need moisture to grow. And so if you remove the moisture or the majority of the moisture, the pathogens have nothing to grow. And so your dried food can stay in a sealed container for a week camping trip if you want, and it won't get moldy. But if you had, you know, a bag of carrots in there, one, they're heavy. They take up a lot of space, but they'd get slimy and moldy after a week without being in the refrigerator. So it's awesome. And so this is nice because it's like, oh, I want to get to camp, but I don't want to have to spend a lot of time rehydrating everything. I want to eat when I get there because I'm hungry. And so he rehydrated on the trail.
Wow, that's amazing. Do you have and you can literally put anything in it.
Yeah. And I have a friend who she likes sandwiches, but she's like, you know, bread gets squished. And so she'd take tortillas. And she's like, I want a burrito, but there's no way I'm carrying a can of refried beans. And we had a volunteer say or tell me that he would take his leftover refried beans. And it says, as strange as it sounds, I would dry them. And then I'd grind them up into kind of a powder. It's like, why? He says, because now when I'm out camping, I've got my dried, cooked, refried beans. I add some water, rehydrate it. And then I've got refried beans that I can put on my tortilla. So I take my leftover cooked rice and he would dry that as well. He says it's basically instant rice. And so you add some water, rehydrate that, and you can have, you know, dried carrots in there, spices. You can, you know, flavor your rice because you can have beans and rice. And again, I mentioned the dried ground beef. You can put that in there. Shredded cheese. If you had, you wouldn't really have that camping, but you can take salsa. And we even have a recipe for a dried salsa. And so you chop up all your salsa ingredients and you dry them. And so you can rehydrate that. So you can have beans and meat and rice and salsa. And you have a burrito when you're out on the field and nothing gets smashed while you're packing it in.
That is so great. That really is. And with the meat, I mean, that is really interesting. You can dehydrate meat. So you had mentioned, what was it? Ground beef. Mm-hmm. But how about other meats? Like, what about chicken?
You could do chicken as well. Yeah. The thing you want to do is make sure that you store it in an airtight container because our air has moisture in it. And so a lot of times people think, for example, they open a pack of crackers and they think, oh, they're going stale because they get soft. It's like, no, they're just rehydrating. Crackers are dry. And so the natural moisture in our air will slowly start to rehydrate food. So you want to keep it in a completely sealed environment to keep pathogens out and keep it from rehydrating. But yeah, you can take your meats. And because a lot of times people just think, oh, I'll take my dried fruit and I'll make granola. Well, there's so much more you can do. So,
wow, that is great. Yeah. Now when you do this, when you're dehydrating your foods, how long will they last? Like for instance, we'll just take carrots and you dehydrate carrots and you're putting them in a dehydrator. I guess you have a machine that actually just, you know, dries
them out.
The moisture out. Then you put them in a glass jar? Is it necessary to have them in a glass jar?
You need to have it in an airtight container. And so you can put them in a glass jar. You want to put it in the container where it takes up almost all the space. So if you have just a little bit of dried carrots, you wouldn't put it in a quart jar with lots of air. Air is not your friend with dehydrating. You want to make sure that you keep the air out. So you can use a freezer bag. You don't want to use just a regular sandwich bag because they're designed to let air come in and out. Otherwise, your sandwiches would get soggy and condensate, you know, from condensation. Want to keep a freezer bag or a thicker bag if you have it, or a freezer container or the vacuum sealers. Those work great for your dried foods, or you could put them in jars. And if you have a glass jar and if you have a vacuum sealer, some people may not realize that there's an attachment that can go on your jar and there's a hose that goes from the attachment to your vacuum sealer, and it will suck the air out of the jar and create an airtight vacuum seal on your jar. And so that way it'll help keep your food better or fresher longer. And so once you've got it stored properly, it will last a long, long time. We tell people to eat it within a year for best quality for your dried foods as well. But if you've stored it well, I mean, it's not like they're going to dry out.
Right. They've already done that.
Yeah. And a lot of times people will store them in the freezer as an added layer. And then you pull them out when you're getting ready to dry it. So that way, you know, it's just kind of an extra layer of storage protection.
Right. And that was for backpacking. Mm-hmm. I mean, how about for camping? What kind of things do you like to have on hand for when you go camping? Because then maybe not necessarily you have to worry about the weight. I mean, I'm assuming.
Yeah,
you're not,
but dishes. So one of the things you can do is you can cook meals beforehand. One of the things that I've seen, I haven't done it yet, but I have some friends that have done it, is if you take spaghetti and you cook spaghetti, your cooked pasta, your sauce, and then you dry that, sounds weird, but you can dehydrate.
That does sound
weird. Dehydrate your spaghetti, and then you don't have to store it in an ice chest. You don't have to worry about having enough ice. And then when you're ready to eat it, you put it in a container, you add some water. It's going to rehydrate as you cook. And then you have everything in one small pot. And you don't have to have a pot to cook your sauce and a pot to cook your noodles and a pot or, you know, a strainer. It's just in one pot and you're all ready to go.
Wow, that is incredible.
Yeah, there's a lot of great resources out there for dehydrating and camping food. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. So spaghetti, you can dehydrate it. Mm-hmm. And you're right, because a lot of times when you're camping, that space in your cooler is very valuable.
Yes. Yeah. And when it's hot, it dries up really fast.
Yeah, right. Well, that brings up another question. So you've got this dehydrated food. Do you have to worry about keeping it cool, or it's okay as long as there isn't any moisture? It doesn't have to,
right.
It's not temperature.
You want it to keep it at room temperature, so you're not going to have it at, you know, 120 degrees. You don't want it sitting out in the sun. You want it to be in a cool, dry, dark spot.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That spaghetti recipe is great. Do you see any reason why maybe you couldn't do it with, you know, something like stew? Could you dehydrate?
You can. And actually, in Amador, if anyone wants, they can contact us, but we had a class, gosh, a while ago, back before the pandemic, and there's a recipe for camper chili where you can use any chili, and you put it on your dehydrator sheet, your what they call a leather sheet, so it obviously won't drip through the cracks, but you can take your chili and dry it, and then you crumble it up, and then you put it in a vacuum seal bag or in a freezer container, and it will seal as well. And then you just rehydrate it with some boiling water and you're good to go. So you can try just about anything.
Wow.
You can add chili out there too.
Yeah. Now, are dehydrators pretty expensive, or how does that work if somebody doesn't have one?
If you don't have one, if you're drying herbs, you can do that with just room temperature and just hang them to dry because they're so thin. You can dry in an oven, but when you're dehydrating, you need to make sure that you've got a heat source. You need to have some kind of a fan to move the air around, because as you heat the food, the water will evaporate, and then you need the fan to blow that water away from the food. And you need to have some kind of a temperature thermometer. Thermostat, because you want to control the heat, because if it goes too high, you cook it instead of drying it. So you can use the oven if it'll go down to 140 degrees. Not everybody's does. Or if you have a convection oven, that would work. You just have to keep it low. If you have just a regular old conventional oven, you need to prop the door open and put a fan outside so it can blow the moisture out of it. I would not want to do that in the summertime here, but a convection oven, you know, in the middle of the night would be fine. But you can find some fairly inexpensive ones at thrift stores and so forth. And so I think it's worth the investment. You just need to make sure that you have a thermostat so that you can control the heat.
And then, you know, if somebody has any questions about it, do Master Food Preservers have maybe samples on their website, you know, where you can take a look, or... Or if they have questions, you have a hotline, don't you?
We do. We have a helpline. You can ask questions through email, or you can contact us on our statewide website, which is MFP, Master Food Preserver, .ucanr.edu. There's a publication section, and they have information about dehydrating, the things to look for. We also have some video libraries from extension offices across the country, and they have examples of dehydrators. But there's a lot out there now. You can find it digital, non-digital, all kinds of cool things.
And you've become a pro at YouTube videos too, Sue. I think you've got them.
I'm working on that. I've been doing some for internal training. Now we got to get some for the public. I talk a lot, and it doesn't always make sense.
No, it's all kinds of great information. But Sue, we ran out of time, and I really appreciate it. This is so fun.
It is. It's great to talk with you, Debbie. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne County. And I'm so glad to be able to talk to our Tuolumne Master Gardener, Mike Kermode. Hello, Mike.
Well, good morning, Debbie.
How are you doing?
Oh, I couldn't be better, thank you. As my wife's father used to say, better than better.
Good. And we were so fortunate as the Master Gardeners because you invited all of us to your lovely garden for essentially, I guess we would call it an open garden instead of an open house. And your garden is, I think, really unique. And I wanted to chat about your garden with you. And the thing that I think is so interesting is that your garden, the back of it, as I walked in, you're growing all food. And it looks just perfectly delightful. It's pretty, but everything is, it seems like it's edible, just about everything that's it looks like it's edible. So how did you decide to turn what would be, I'm thinking, a normal backyard into a food producing environment?
Well, Debbie, first of all, it was the pleasure of my wife, Lisa, and myself to invite all of our master gardeners over to our home and share what we are doing. You know, the idea was to provide people, you know, visualization as to what we were doing, and at the same time, you know, get their ideas and suggestions as things that might be able to prove that we might be able to improve, given that we are relatively new to this area. So we've been here for now about a year and a half, and we were fortunate with the property that we have purchased. That number one, it's just got a lovely home on it, but also the previous people that had lived here had left us with blessings of a few anchor apple trees and some front gardens with flowers and different things on them that they were working on. So we came into the property with a great structure, bones, if you would, that, you know, we just needed to kind of put our touches on it. So I've been in agriculture for 40 plus years. I've always been blessed with a bit of a green thumb. I'm educated as an agronomist and have a bachelor's of science degree from Cal Poly, and have been fortunate over my career to be involved in agricultural projects literally all over the world. And I have been further blessed with the opportunity to retire as of the end of this last June. So I was looking for a property that was big enough to be able to develop into what we were visualizing for the property, but not too big where it just became a burden. And what we have now is really a labor of love. So what our vision was to basically turn our property into essentially a food forest with a permaculture type of theme associated with it, blending a lot of edibles, herbs, medicinal plants, trees, which we have a variety of approximately 30 different trees of fruiting types, berries from boysenberries, blackberries, raspberries, strawberries, along with a number of different annuals, tomatoes and carrots and corn and those kind of things. So what one of the greatest learnings or greatest pleasures that we had in developing this project was just how much support we received from the local community, including our master gardeners, in terms of helping us with our vision. So everything from Hal Dudley that helped us with the hard landscape, Tom Thompson that helped us with the fencing to control the deer within the property, Sam with Alley Gardens or Alley Tree Service that just blessed us with, I think, up to 10 loads of wood chips, which became the foundation or what we refer to as the forest floor within our property. And then other people that gave us ideas with cedar planks that we could turn into raised beds and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Neighbors that were willing to give us their leaves and grass clippings and all these kind of wonderful things, everything that went into what we are building to be a food forest. So,
Hey, Mike, I think it's really interesting. When I came up to your house, the front of your house has beautiful beds and flowers, perennials, and a few and some annuals. And then as I was walking into your backyard, there was a little patch and it was in a raised bed where it was, I wouldn't have noticed it unless until your wife, Lisa, mentioned it, that you were growing mushrooms there. So, but going into the backyard, what's kind of different, I'm thinking, and I love the idea of the food forest, is that you've got different types of ways for food to grow there. You have planter beds, and like you said, the mulch, but you've also got some of your favorite plants like cactus and bonsai kind of scattered in pots. And it's just visually really pretty to look at, besides being very productive.
Well, the mushrooms was just another great example of community support. We attend the Sonora Farmers Market every Sunday. And one of our favorite things there was, you know, visiting Don Barker Farms.
Jordan?
Yes, Jordan and his team. And Jordan not only is doing amazing things with real permaculture, and he has been an absolute inspiration for me, but his father, who is growing mushrooms, had actually suggested to me, because I was telling him about what we were doing with wood chips and stuff, he says, Mike, why don't you consider putting down wine caps, which is a type of edible mushroom, similar to a portobello, I would say. So I followed up on his idea. We seeded our property underneath the wood chips with edible mushrooms. And we were harvesting edible mushrooms this last spring and just thoroughly enjoyed it. In addition to that, we've got logs, oak logs that we received from a local tree that was freshly cut. And then we inoculated those logs with both shiitake and hen of the woods mushrooms. And I was actually looking at them last night in the mycelium, which is essentially the rooting part of the mushroom, is starting to come through the logs. And I'm hoping this fall we may have our own homegrown shiitake and hen of the woods. So the garden just keeps producing and surprising us almost on a daily basis.
Hey, Mike, I was kind of curious, and it's lovely, but why did you feel it was important to grow your own food? I mean, because you could have changed it into an ornamental garden, but so why is this important to you?
Well, when you look at our garden, it really is a blend of ornamentals and pollinators. I mean, we've got wonderful things like pincushions and zinnias that are adding color. And attracting beneficial insects and bees and all these kind of wonderful things. But really, the purpose of it was, I was looking at, well, okay, I'm getting ready to retire. I am a classic type A personality. I have been very successful through my career in terms of getting things done and accomplishing some wonderful things with a great team behind me. And if I was to do nothing but sit on my hands through retirement, I would drive my wife crazy. So I had to find something to do that kept me busy, but also something that I loved. And the vision continues to evolve. The timing couldn't be better, especially given the high inflation and the high cost of food that we're all dealing with. So we're eating out of our garden almost every single night. And, you know, that just does a wonderful thing in terms of, number one, we know where our food is coming from. We do everything organically with no pesticide or chemical sprays that are not organic approved. So our garden is very healthy. Our soil structure is healthy. So we know what we're eating, and we're eating a lot of it, and we're able to share it with neighbors. So it's all a win-win.
Well, and then another thing I believe you're planning to do, or at least your wife is planning to do, is preserving some of your harvest.
And that is an important part of it. You know, my wife is just a wonderful partner. And, you know, part of our garden is dedicated to dye plants, D-Y-E. And these are plants that have been specifically planted so that Lisa can harvest them and then turn them into natural dyes for her fabrics and some of the projects that she's working on. But yes, like you say, Lisa has been fermenting and canning, doing quick. In fact, we just had a great onslaught of beautiful pickling cucumbers. And she just finished up making, I don't know, at least 5 or 6 jars of pickles. We had an abundance of carrots, so she pickled carrots. We pickle eggs. And believe me, it's a real blessing to have the kind of quality of food and the ability to be able to store it and turn it into a variety of different things.
Now, when you planned out your garden, were you looking to be able to harvest year round? Is that one of your goals?
It is. So, you know, we're still very much new to the southern High Sierras. You know, although we're at 2,100 feet, so we're still very much in a very learning type of process. So we're learning better what to plant when and what things does well and what things don't. But yes, you know, we are planning to be able to harvest out of the garden as close to 12 months as possible. You know, I've prepared for the winters with hoops that can go over my raised beds, you know, and different things like that. So we're going to do the very best we can. And then hopefully with the preserved foods that Lisa is making, we'll be able to supplement that throughout the winter as well.
That sounds wonderful. And Mike, you're not going to believe it, but we ran out of time. And I really want to thank you so much for chatting with me about your garden. It's been wonderful. Thank you. And bye-bye.
Well, thank you, Debbie. And you know, I mean, and thanks to all the master gardeners that have been an inspiration to me, family and friends and the local community. None of this could be done without them. And I'm very much appreciated. So thank you and have a great day.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us. If you would like to contact us for more information, remember you can contact our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912, Or you can look us up on the KAAD-LP.org website. Look for Over the Garden Gate. Thank you.